GAA on Off the Ball.
Good evening, good evening. Fáil Tuaróg, go come on, Lucas Gael, Guidor. How are we all doing? Tosha Ian took a vat and shut a Guidor. Unfortunately, that is all the Irish I have. I do apologise for not coming better prepared, but it's an absolute privilege to be here tonight at the home of the Ulster Club Football Champions. I'm Nathan Murphy. I'm going to be your host for the evening. I think this is, without question, the most scenic location we have ever had for an off-the-ball roadshow. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. We flew up from Dublin today. The boom is officially back, but it did mean that we got to see the full vista of this part of Donegal, and it was a particularly spectacular setting. So we've got a brilliant night lined up. Unfortunately, David Brady can't make it. Did send his apologies. He'll be up over the summer, though, and I'm sure you'll know where to find them. But we have a brilliant lineup. We're going to be looking ahead to the Super 8s. Everybody feeling good about Donegal? Good, good. So we're going to be chatting about that a little bit later on. Oisín Kiernan is with us, the Cavan footballer and Super Value ambassador. He's going to tell us about their journey through the championship and also his year as well. A really interesting story, and help us look ahead to what's coming over the next few weeks. But we have some Donegal legends in the house as well to get us started. Please give a very special Guidor welcome to two of your local heroes, Kevin Cassidy and Eamon McGee. And a very special Guidor welcome as well to St. Eunan's Brendan Devaney. Feel free to boo. Jesus, that is not a spot any man ever wants to find himself in, Brendan. Squashed in between McGee and Cassidy.
Have you ever had a headlock from Cass about 12 o'clock at night at the bar? You'll know that this is simple enough here. There's no getting away from the man.
You're very welcome to the most successful club in Donegal GAA history.
Thanks very much. For now.
For now?
We've got a plan.
Do you?
Well, somebody has. I don't at the minute, but somebody has.
So what is it, Kevin? You've got 15 Donegal county titles.
We're going to poach Michael Boyle.
We've got 15. They've got 13 plus one of Ballyshannon's. That's 14 you have, is it?
No, they have actually 13. You don't count the 14th one because they were beaten the boardroom, so it's 13 officially. So
two ahead.
I don't know the internal politics. Is this the big talking point around Donegal?
I have a tattoo in my stomach. Must be wrong then, I mean, you must be right. I'll have to get it changed.
13.
So the rivalry, is it a rivalry between Guidor and St. Eunan's? There was probably, 15, 16 years ago, it was regular county finals. Was it pretty bitter stuff?
More so for us than them, I suppose, yeah. But when they got there, they tended to want it. So I've always said they listened to that shit.
Did you ever get one over on them?
No, they beat us in two finals. We won a semi-final one year, and then there was one year we were going really well, and I thought, right, they wouldn't slag, actually. Two boys are well nice, but if you're down here, you might get the ear burned off you a bit. Because I ended up here a lot, because me and the boys were good mates, but we were going really well. It's probably the best we ever were as a club, and they were playing Termon in a semi-final, and somehow Termon could strive to beat them. So it's only one, I think we might have had a chance that year. The other 2 years they deserved to win the game, so good luck to them, that's sport.
Did you find yourself man-marking Devaney at any stage?
No, I was always marking the fat boy. Devaney, Neil would probably pick up Devaney. He's at a bit of pace now, but whenever Devaney was in earshot, I was always giving him a wee reminder, like if he missed a point or did something silly with the ball. So
he was good at that. It's probably his best quality.
What was the young Neil McGee like?
Neil quality, I'd say. Best fullback Donegal I've ever had, you know. He's a tough guy to play against, yeah.
Yeah.
Good mate as well, so that's what I mean. We had all been good friends off it. There was whatever happened on the pitch. After that, we were always together, you know, so we would always come down. There was a tradition in Donegal. You came to the team that you lost to, if you lost it, and they came to you. So every year in, year out, until Glenties came along. We're not going to Glenties. To look at that, sure. No offence if he was on it. But, and their blanket defence and all that. So that stopped then. I don't know as it started up since, but it was a nice tradition. So what odds? Everybody's crying in their pints. They may as well come to where the party's at. And Guidor, there always was one hell of a party.
I would have thought that's the last place in the world you want to go.
It's amazing what 3 or 4 pints can do.
Hey, well, that's my exact point. This man, after 3 or 4 pints, after just winning the county championship, I would have thought is the last person in the world you want to see.
But you got to take it in context. Sport, you know, if you spend time down in the dumps about it, you're wasting time. You may as well get out there and hit the town.
I remember the first time we were at 0-2 for a long, long time, and we beat these guys in the final. And in fairness, then we would have been good mates in the county. All the Eunice lads and the Gero lads would have got on well. But I remember being in a haze about 3 or 4 in the day, up in the bar. And as what I thought was a guard came in the door. It was actually him dressed in a guard's uniform. So we had a good day's crack that day.
Where did you get the Garda uniform?
I had a couple of mates was cops, and they let us off. they let us off another day, actually. Whenever Kevin joined the squad, I was kind of wild bit energy with him. I was kind of gravitated towards him. So the first time we won a big championship game, we went in the sauce, and there were Kenny. He's like, I'm coming you. I said, that's all right. Went up the house, we're getting changed, and we had a bottle of vodka, and we slammed it on this, and he came on, and I set of my goggles and swimming hats in it. So we thought it would be great crack. We head down the street with these goggles and hats on us, down the road. He's out the window shouting and roaring. Now, this is 15 years ago, different times or whatever, but we come on a couple of cops.
Not that different.
So one of the cops is like, get out, get you in. So he didn't recognise, and if you know Cass, he says, get the fuck. So just after I get the cop, he shouts at him, get the fuck. So your man then was about to put the cuffs on, but we got him calmed down, headed in, and if I go into a bar now, I tend to shy up out of the way. Me and him land on me fucking goggles and swimming hats and all that malarkey on us, you know.
What hope did I have? I came into the squad and these two were two boys I looked up to, and then you just wonder then, like, what hope did we have?
Well, so let's get to the root cause then of the Donegal drinking culture 15, 20 years ago, but I think we maybe have got to the root cause. What year did you make your Donegal debut?
97, kind of. You know, they used to play the league before the... I came in after going to a championship in 97, yeah. The disputed one, you know.
And what was the culture of Donegal football at that stage? You're, 5 years removed from winning an All-Ireland. Like, at that stage, was it you played hard, you partied hard?
I suppose.
Or did you bring that in?
No, definitely not. It was probably a bit more sensible. This was before the vodka Red Bull, Fat Frog era. So everything
what
was...
wonderful inventions.
Everything was pints, and things had a bit of a nicer trajectory. The bus went from Noel Fred down and back singing, Nevermore the Green Valleys are calling to me. The boys like tops off and stuff flying every direction, and it just went from there to there, you know. But when I joined all the 92 boys, obviously you get to play with Tony Boyd and John Joe and Higgery and Barry McGowan and all them guys, was unreal to join up with them, you know.
Yeah. It was obviously an incredibly enjoyable time as well. Like, you enjoyed the partying, you enjoyed being together as a group, and even though there was this rivalry at club level, like, did you define yourself more by the club or by the county? Did you prefer going in with the club on a Tuesday night or the county on a Tuesday night?
It's hard to say. Initially, I kind of thought Donegal was more important because I was young, because I thought there was more interest in it. But as time went on, I realised the club was more important. So I suppose I learned a bit, like, over time, that's where your real backing is, you know. If you're playing well with Donegal, that's all right. If you weren't, you're going to get it. Like, whereas your club, you know, they tend to be behind you all the way. So I kind of learned that as time went on.
Kevin, when you joined up with the Donegal squad, what were your expectations? Was it that this is elite inter-county football? It's going to be a very serious affair. We keep our heads down, we work hard, and we see where we get to at the end of the summer?
Yeah, definitely. I think when you go, you know, minors, 21s and senior for your club, obviously, like, Devaney and them went a good run in the qualifiers in 2001, I think it was, and there was serious interest. So obviously, as a player, it's the next place you want to go. So I did get a shout in 2001, but I don't think my fitness was there, and I joined the panel early, but was let go. So then I wanted a second bite at it, and luckily I was playing well for the club in 2002. Then I got an invitation to the panel, and it was never to be just part of it. As far as I'm concerned, if I was there, I was going to make the team. And then once I made the team in, it was to see how far we're going to go. And, you know, throughout Ireland, you will get asked all the time about the crack and everything else. But the side that a lot of people didn't see is that we trained extremely, extremely hard. Our probably only letdown was we would never go out before games or any of that stuff. It tended to be after games. It carried on a wee bit longer than it probably should have, looking back, but you hit the nail on the head. We enjoyed every minute of it, you know what I mean? We look back now and, you know, some of those days were the funniest I've ever played on. Yes, maybe we didn't win as much as we should have, but I certainly enjoyed it.
No regrets at all. Like, when you think back to your first season, 2002, you get an All-Star. Like, that's the sort of form you're in, and you've that draw with Dublin. And what happens next?
The night in Corpus is probably better than any other All-Star I've ever opened. Now, in fairness, I know that decision of probably not going home. We saw it as 2 weeks out. We probably would be ready for Dublin. We weren't.
What happened? They arrive into the players' lounge just after you?
Yeah, well, we went back to Camden Court for dinner, and Mickey Moran's a lovely fella, and he said, listen, boys, you have 2 pints and you're going down home. He made the mistake. Once you tell somebody you have 2 pints, forget about it. So we had 2 pints, and we went in for a dinner, and you could see the lads kind of looking at each other, and gradually we edged out to the foyer. Mickey came out, and there's about 20 bags sitting in the foyer that were taken off the bus. So he asked, what are these? Amstead in Dublin. So listen, Mickey, there was no row. He just said, listen, boys, it's training Tuesday night, just be there. We ended up staying in Dublin. I think you went home, did you?
But I've seen sense of those days, man.
Listen, we had a massive night out, and then we suffered probably in 2 weeks' time after that. But, you know, Dublin beat us. Looking back now, could we have done any different? Possibly so. Would they have beaten us anyway? Maybe. Do you know what I mean?
I thought the story went that you weren't going to drink, and then the Dublin players arrived in and they had a drink, and you thought, well, they're not going to beat us in the drinking game, that's for sure.
No, definitely not.
Well, I was on the bus. I just remember Mickey and his wee Mahara accent. He looked around and he's like, where the hell is everybody? About half the bus had left, but I think there were some student boys in there, and everybody had planned either if we won, they weren't going, and if we lost, we were going. Nobody factored the draw. Then they didn't know where they were, and as you said, once they got a couple of scoops in, some guys started to influence other guys, and away they went. But it was bad, looking back. I know it would never happen now, obviously, but it was bad.
The fact that 17 years later you're still shaking your head when you say it was bad worries me greatly. Ulster football at that time is in an incredible place. You've got a Tyrone side who some would put down as arguably one of the greatest teams of all time. Armagh bringing it to a whole new level as well. Where are you mentally at that stage? Like, do you think you're at their level?
No, I don't. And I think the drinking thing was a bit of a cop out. I think a lot of people bought into it. That's why we didn't win.
You mean the actual drinking or about the drinking?
No, the actual drinking culture, a lot of it at the time was blamed on Donegal, the party animals. Like, Stephen Cass went to college in Sligo IT and went with a good few Mayo boys, and they were making All-Ireland finals. And any time we were partying, they were right beside us. And what I think when looking back on it now is that we just lacked that mental edge. We just lacked that ability to win or know-how to win. We had Armagh on the wrecks, I'd say 2 or 3 times over them noughties period, and there was at least one Ulster title in that team, and we just didn't know how to go out and win it, didn't have the steel to win it. And yes, drinking culture played a part in it. It wasn't the be end of it. It was just that mental edge that you need to go out and be the winners, the likes Armagh and the Tyrones had.
I think at that time, our problem, Eamon Devine will probably agree, we thought that training Tuesday, training Thursday, training Saturday was enough. Whereas, I remember we played Armagh in a National League game in Balbuffet, and, you know, March time or whatever, we were walking up to get the feed in Jackson's, and they were going downstairs to do a gym session after playing us, and we were laughing at them. Do you know, thinking, these boys. They took it to another level. I think it took us a good few years to even get near that. You know, what Eamon said there, we had them the rack, we did. I think, I can't remember what fame was, they got a goal. Tony Blake kind of palmed the ball off the crossbar. They scored, and then they took over. But I think it was their power and their physical strength that edged them out towards the end, you know.
And What happened with Donegal was we kept changing manager, and the manager would come in and just play his own style. We had to formulate a plan to beat Armagh. Never mind. We could beat Throne all the time. We could never beat Armagh. We beat them once. The time you scared the shit out of Herdy. Jumping at them. That actually was my goal. Never get the credit for it. But
you were never going to score.
But we kept changing managers. You needed to formulate a plan. Armagh had started to come into a kind of blocking up channels. Started pumping weight, started getting big. We kept changing managers. They kept saying, we're going to play our own style of football. We're going to play a Donegal style of football. And as you see, once a team's organised and you get them ready and they become a defensive unit, if you're just an attacking team that goes out and plays like your normal 15, you're going to keep crashing. And that's why when we come up against Armagh, they had a plan. We didn't. We just went out and played. But that happened too often, and we still get that close to them. If we had somebody come in and says, right, forget about staying in Division 1, forget about Ulster Championship, how do we beat Armagh? That should have been our focus. If we had a train towards that, that team would have won an Ulster. And what happens is we just kept coming up that bit short because we were basically just going out and playing old-style football, which at that stage, throwing Armagh in, but gone a few levels ahead.
Does that always have to come from the manager? Can it not come from within the squad? As you say, you're looking at teams going down, doing sessions after matches, that you don't all come together and say, actually, this game is kind of changing from maybe what we thought it was 3-4 years ago?
I think, honestly, at that time, a lot of our boys, maybe if they were at colleges up this side of the world, like the UUJs and the Warwick place down in Limerick, when they were seriously into sports science, and that, I don't think we had enough guys exposed to that environment, if you know what I mean. Nowadays we do. You know, all the guys know what they're at and different things. We thought it was enough just to go out and play football, but it wasn't. I think, honestly, and I've said it before, we were beaten by Armagh teams who weren't as good as us, probably skill-wise, but they had us sussed, you know what I mean?
I think it goes to a lot of them Donegal lads. We were the best in the world. We were so nice. But again, just came back to that steel. We organise.
You're not going to say you didn't have a nasty streak, are you?
I was actually a nice lad once upon a time.
The McGees, known the length and breadth of the land as the nice defenders.
I think
never put a hand on you.
There was a time where in 2004 we'd organise a coup that myself and Brian McLaughlin were getting dropped. A crowd of lads met up and says, right, if two lads are getting dropped, everybody gets dropped. The whole thing petered out because nobody wanted to fall out with anybody. There was no strong, and they were strong characters, but there just wasn't that leadership. And, you know, you see that now when you see the likes of Michael Murphy and the way he takes a squad, and if he says something's not right, he's going to say it to you. He's not going to F you out in front of the crowd, or he's going to take you aside, he's going to say it to you. And we needed that, someone just kind of, maybe, what about pushing it in the style of play? What about saying to Cass or Raymond, listen, lads, just ease back in the party and get to the gym? And I think that's what we lacked a wee bit.
Did anyone ever say to you, ease back in the party?
John Gillet tried a good few times, but it didn't work. I don't think so. I think we all kind of came together. There was nobody.
It was the north of the county and the west boys here were all the trouble.
Oh, yeah.
They were pure shovel through the gap, right? they were still having their pints. And I felt bad for them sometimes because all the trouble was always up here. You come in like a wee schoolboy to train and then the Tuesday night, you know.
I agree with that, Davey, but I've had this with many a manager who questioned it. Those lads who enjoyed the night out, those are the lads who would go to the trenches with you come Championship Day. That was always my counteraction. I don't know if it washed. But
there must have been a part. Say 03 was the Longford qualifier, which is a famous enough story. You go to a wedding, is it the night before?
Yeah.
And it ends up being quite a late night, which is fine because the game's in evening throw-in, so you'll recover. You wake up at what? Midday, 2 o'clock. You end up dropped from the team.
Yeah.
Is there any part of you at that stage, there's people around you saying, listen, you're an all-star at the moment. You're a young guy. You're just making your way. Maybe you need to change tack?
At the bar, there was a captain of this club, actually, Michael Doherty. He tried his best, but Fast Frogs, I think it was 3 or 4 of me. That stage, there was no talking to me. But that day, and I said it before, when you think, crazy young flea, thinking, as you say, the game's at 6 o'clock, I'll be fine. I think I was ending up down in Brendan Boyle's house till 8:30 that morning. But the next day, when you're in the dressing room, and when you know that... It's not about yourself, it's when you know you've let the guys down. That's when I felt terrible. I was sitting in the dugout in McCool Park, and you know, Brian McInniff actually apologised for not that I couldn't play. That's how nice he was. But you feel terrible because you've let the lads down and the people who've come to watch Donegal do well that day.
You know? So you bought the pints that night. That's how bad you felt.
I did. I never actually went out that night. I came home.
Ah, was Brian McInniff too nice? Like, well, if there was a manager, if there was an authoritarian figure who came in and tried to smack you into shape at that stage, would you have listened?
We're maybe, slow enough to answer. So. I don't know, would we have listened? Hey, like, I always go back. If I could tell myself to do anything different, I'd end up telling myself to piss off. And I just don't think we were ready to listen. I don't think we had to go on that, and we had to fail, and we just had to keep, you know, effing up. And at the stage when Jim came up, we were easy to work with. We were definitely ready to listen. But I just don't think, I think he could have took anybody in at that time, and like, we were going to do our own thing.
McNuff was just like a daddy. He just loved Donegal. He just loves football so much. We were kind of like his children, and he's got enough of them anyway. But he would do anything for you, absolutely anything. I would land at his hotels randomly and just jump in, and there was no word of nothing. If you were there for food or anything, he just took care of you, and that's the way he was. And the boys would be ringing in the middle of the night that it was terrible times. On the sauce and
to this but day, I still know Brian McNuff's number off by heart. Because we just, like, I don't know, but myself or Cass or, you know, Christy would be there, and we'll say 4 o'clock in the morning, ring up Brian McNuff, he'd ring, and, you know, he would actually start having the crack with you. Hello, Wayne. Hello, Kevin. How are you? Where are you? And he was just so nice that he'd be he wouldn't tell you to just go to bed or whatever. He'd just sit there for 5 minutes, and we would be making no sense at all. And
McNuff was player manager in 1972, so you can imagine the change in football when he last was there. You know
that night of the wedding. This is no. We decided to ring him about 2:30 in the morning, the wedding, and I was passing the phone around. And here he was discussing tactics with people at 2:30 in the morning who were at the wedding with me and the beer. Like, that's how just seriously driven for Donegal he was, you know?
And did you not put one of them and say, get that fella to bed?
No.
See, I can understand these two because, you know, I follow them on Instagram and Snapchat and you see what's rough to it. You, I just think, you know, very calm, sensible, measured man.
He's a philosopher.
Who's been a philosopher, exactly. Yeah, dropped 4 times by different managers. Like, were you just lucky that social media wasn't around back then?
I was.
You've been able to reinvent yourself.
Very lucky, hey, that we just... my wild days bypassed the Snapchat and the Twitter days. I always say that I was just terrible. I was always getting caught. But, you know, I came in and I just was no sense at all. And, you know, as I was saying, these lads... You know, and that night of the wedding, I heard Cass's on the beer, and I wasn't invited to the wedding, and I landed down in a Tracky Bottoms t-shirt, and I was at the party at 4 o'clock in the morning, and, you know, and this was Cass going out to play for Donegal the next day, and everybody was cool about it.
Wait now, so the team were staying in the same hotel as the wedding that you were...
No, I wasn't on the squad. Like, okay. I was 18. Maybe 19 at the time, and there was a Gidor wedding, and, you know, word fell through, Kevin's on the beer, and I was out with a few of the locals, and I said, flip, I'm away down to Austin Gidor, and me had a pair of Tracky Bottoms, a t-shirt on, and none at the wedding, a few pints in at the wedding, up to Brendan's house, and, you know, just, this is all normal, like, and continued the process, you know, and through the different managers, McInniff dropped me, McGaver dropped me, John Joe dropped me. What time? So we have another few. McGinnis dropped me, and that was just
it. They always took you back.
I was going to say, you must be very charming that they've always.
I always thought I was a good player. Like,
it was Anne McGee who got him back in the squad all the time. Man, used to have to ring up and apologise.
He'll never do it again.
That was always, I think it was a running joke, and I used to stand up in front of the squad and say, listen, lads, it's never going to happen again. And, and so many times, and I remember there was one time, and I says, lads, they were never going to happen again. One of these big serious meetings, and everybody just laughed. This big roaring laughing, and that was just the way it was. But thankfully, you know, you kind of copped on a wee bit and got working with Jim and just showed a different direction. And again, just comes back to it, he brought that steel. Like, it wasn't necessarily the partying, but he just brought that mental edge that was needed.
Just before we get to then the Jim McGuinness era, the 07 league, like, I remember that day so well because, much like the final between Mayo and Donegal, there was just this magical feel, both these counties so desperate for success, this massive crowd, and Donegal get the victory and they get that national title that they've been waiting for, well, nowhere near as long as Mayo, but yeah. They get that national title. Like, how important was that? Did you feel that was going to be a launch pad for what was the... for the next few years?
We hoped it would be. In fairness to Brian McGiver, he kept talking about getting to the top table. And the top table then was Mayo were always there, Tyrone, Armagh, these kind of teams. So I think when we got over the line that day, it was fantastic for the fans. But for as a team, we thought we were going places. And I think it did. Turn the corner for some players, like, you know.
Yeah, well, you don't want a Division 1 title by, like, prove that the quality was there. Everybody talked about this Donegal team and the potential we had, and this backed it up, and it's, again, like, the quality's there in Mayo because they've done it. They've won in Croke Park, they've won a Division 1 title, and that showed kind of that all this talk of potential, it wasn't just talk, we can actually go and do it, but it was how we responded then for the build-up to Championship. And the response wasn't anywhere near it. Like, what we should have done was lift it and move it to another level, maybe two levels, but it never happened. We were happy with that. And
I think we put too much in. We were playing Armagh in the McKenna Cup, I think it was about the second week of January. We nearly took the door off the hinges coming out because we wanted to beat Armagh, and we did beat them. Then in the league, we were flying. We're up. We had nowhere else to go. We've seen it with league teams over the years. We put too much in. If you look at our last game that year, was in Healy Park, the same ground, and we played five championship games 5 weeks in a row, two club and three county. And our last game was against Monaghan. And I was just thinking back to December. We came out ready for battle, and we came out against Monaghan. There's hardly a whimper in the dressing room. We just lost. We lost the buzz altogether, and we lost a... That's the man, unfortunately. This wee man might even been about at the time, but
was it, like, when you, in hindsight, was there anything you could have done, or is that just the way teams go? That you tried to peak for the league, you achieved what you wanted to achieve. That there was no way of sustaining that run, that positivity. Could you have done something different?
Again, I think it was a new manager. It was McGiver, and he was very keen to do well in the league. The fact that we won it, we weren't probably at worried. We were happy we did win it. We'd never won the National League before. But I think then you need a mix of players. We use the same players by in week in, week out. And then, as I say, come Championship, then there was no lift in it. We were just ready to be beaten at some stage, you know, and that's unfortunate. That's how that year went out. But as Eamon says, a lot of those players were there that dropped in, that came back in to 2011. You know, it's only a few years. Most of them guys were still there. So as much as Donegal went down, they just needed somebody to come in and take it again. And then that happened with Jim.
What was your reaction when you heard Jim McGuinness was getting the job?
You know, Jim had went for the interview, I don't know how many times now, but...
Well, was it 2008 he went and he had his PowerPoint presentation?
Yeah,
and it turned out
I remember
no
actually thinking when he got the PowerPoint presentation on, that's what it was. I remember thinking at the time, you know, that's going to be a good man. That's a good Donegal man. And he's good ideas. And, you know, he'd done the Glenties thing. But when I initially chatted him, you know, he called me over, and I think there was a few of the special cases. That's the way you want to put it. Yeah. So you went in, you sat.
A couple of them sitting on the couch.
Yeah. You went in, you sat in his, called over the house, and you sat into his office, and he says, right, we're going to go and play for Donegal, and we're going to do something different. And it's all sounding good. And then he says, in this project, I'm going to win in All Ireland. And then he lost me at that. And, you know, I've said this myself, I had this conversation myself, I've heard this before from three different managers, so...
Did it not sound different coming from him?
He was intense. He's an intense man when he's in that zone. You know, he was convincing, but we'd been there so many times, we'd heard it all the same, these big crisis meetings, these big start-of-year meetings where everything's going to be different, and you become a bit jaded and you become... harder to convince, being the best way. And then he just comes out. He wasn't talking about Ulster. He was talking about we'd been nowhere near winning in Ulster. Like it says, we touched on Armagh, but like we just couldn't do it. He was mentioned one in All Ireland's, and then, you know, I was kind of right, and just walked out. And he gave me this gym program, and I says, no bother, Jim. And I just wasn't convinced. But I thought when his name was announced, when he was announced for the job, this man, he's a Donegal man at heart. He's going to do good things.
So you say there were special cases then, and at this stage you're starting to become a more senior figure in the squad. How does he go about convincing you? Did he just let that happen naturally, or was there a continuous work on with you over the space of six, 9 months?
from that initial conversation, you know, he says things are going to have to change him, and I think, you know, there's no harm in mentioning Kavanagh was in that bracket. Big Neil was in the bracket.
Kavanagh stopped hanging about with me.
Yeah. Marty McElhinney was in that bracket. And I always say, even to this day, that someone out of that group was going to get dropped because McGuinness had to show everybody that he was serious. And unfortunately, I accommodated him. And you know, I had my peace with that. I wasn't going to play for Donegal again. He says, you're no longer part of my plans. Not going to play for Donegal again. Seeing there was a different buzz, you know, Big Neil being in conversation probably daily. Christy, he's a good friend of mine. Neil, the brother, is living at home at the time. And I could see there was just something different there. They were saying nothing. Big Neil, said it before, Big Neil says, just don't ask me anything about training, about the setup, because I'm just going to tell you lies. I don't want to lie to you. And I said, fair enough. And this went on, and I kind of got this wee drive back, started playing probably good spell with the club, playing well at fullback. Fortunately, there was an issue with fullback line at the time, cornerback. Jim thought that the under-21s were going to bridge that gap, and some of them just weren't at that level. And, you know, they heard McGee's back playing well for Gidor. So he made the call. He called down the house and he says, right, we're going to do it differently.
You're saying, I've heard it all before.
And as I said before, I was ready to listen that time. And, you know, we put things in place to ensure that it wasn't going to happen. And, you know, the thing about it was some great times afterwards, some, you know, the partying and some brilliant times. But it was just
all in its place.
Sorry?
All in its place.
All in its place, like, but it was just, we had such good times too at the time that, you know, there was this thing we all love, like monks and this big serious thing. Like, it wasn't the case, say. It was brilliant times.
What did he put in place and what changed for you? Was it stop hanging around with Brendan Devenny? Was it as simple as
just
that?
Just cut the ties.
Delete his number.
Yeah, well, you know, in that bracket, when I say special case, I was a special case of a special case. I would say if I was kept going the road that I was going, I'd be lucky to play senior football. I might tog out for the reserves if they're stuck for 15. They would say, call up to McGee, his gear bag might be there. So I had to make a change in my whole life. I had to make a change and, you know, get things in place that this wasn't going to be the continuous road that I was going to be on, the circle of just messing up, starting up again, messing up. You know, we had to just break that chain. And, you know, thankfully, that was probably the start of it for me there.
Yeah, pretty difficult thing to do.
Definitely, when you're coming from, you know, that drinking culture we talked about, and, you know, they love the crack in Gidor too.
You came there, Kenny was born.
Yeah, it turned into a born bugger when I moved to Letterkenny. But no, that was it. It was hard, like, but it was better than the other option of just, you know, wasting all that potential, like.
Yeah.
Because I'd probably come across a big-headed bollocks for saying it, but I was a good player. I was a very good player.
What about you then, Kevin? What was the first conversation with Jim McGuinness? Was it a similar story?
It was, actually. I would have played with Jim, and
yeah,
I would have known him well. And a lot of people don't know this, but John Joe was in as manager in 2010, and John Joe was a fantastic manager in person, but on the coaching side, we were falling down, and I was captain that year. And myself and Carol Lacey had a conversation, and we thought, because Jim had actually done wonders with 21s, and you were hearing all these stuff. We were training with the seniors, and we were hearing the kind of store, the stuff that 21s were doing, and we were kind of looking on with envy, because we thought that this boy knows what was in. So I actually called Jim, and I asked him, is there any way you would maybe come in and give us a hand? And his answer was, listen, I will be in, but it'll be in when I'm in control. And we respected that. I respected that. So then, obviously, I was finished that year, and we got a hiding in Cross and Glen. And to be honest, I thought it was time for those young lads to come through and maybe older lads like myself to push on.
McGuinness is listening.
He probably is here somewhere. But,
he's free. He's got that time in his hands.
I just had it. Obviously, when I spoke to him.
Too much. Jesus.
Kick a man when he's down there.
Bloody hell.
I can take a joke. I think he used to be able to do it. Right?
We'll see.
That's good out.
Jeez, yeah. But as Eamon says,
see the cash.
When you speak to him, he's a seriously driven individual. And I think maybe Eamon might have believed it the first conversation, but when we were in that room and he spoke to us, there was just something different. The buy-in that we spoke about earlier on that wasn't there. And Eamon's right, after 2007, 2008, 2009, 2010, we were coming towards a stage that was either go somewhere or we're going to be lost. And I think all the lads were ready for that, real intense. And plus the fact, I think the campaign he had with the 21s, like I said, we were looking at that with envy. So then when you got the chance to work with him, everybody just towed the line. And like, I have no problem saying he's probably one of the best people I work with on the training pitch, getting the best out of players and getting the best out of a team, really.
Because he's obviously an incredible communicator, and to have that then translate onto the training pitch, not every manager has that. A lot of managers, a lot of coaches, and they can say the right thing, but to be actually able to talk the talk and then go out onto the training pitch and have these pretty radical ideas for how the team are going to play. Like, from what you knew of him, were you surprised he had that level of depth at all?
No, because what I spoke about earlier on, about us lads maybe not being in the UUJs and being around the environments, Jim had gone. He'd gone to Tralee, he'd gone to UUJ, he had coached teams. We knew him quite well, I knew him quite well, so he knew what he was doing. And then when he came in, he knew what to expect, because when he was in, he was in. Do you know what I mean? So as soon as he came in, I think everybody's levels just went through the roof. And he maintained that. And Eamon will tell you, and Davy will tell you, if you were at a training session and you weren't put it in, he would let you know. So there was no slacking. It was all in or nothing, you know.
Did you cop that fairly quickly when you went back in, that maybe you're no longer looking on jealously at what other county teams were doing in terms of their level of preparation, that suddenly you were being brought right up to it?
Yeah, I came in, they'd asked Paddy McBurdy to come in around, was it May time, Cass, was it? Or end April, yeah. May time. And myself and McBurdy came in, we made the introduction to Jim and the management team. And I was in fairly good shape, or thought I was. And within 50 minutes of the session, I was saying, Jeannie Mac, this is different level altogether. This was the level we'd seen Armagh able to produce. I didn't know it at the time, but that's what it was, that the Tyrones were able to produce. And, you know, I'd looked after myself, I trained well with the club, but I was nowhere near. I wasn't getting the balls I should be getting. The boys were just taking off, and my tongue was just out for them first few months. And then a few of the club lads, they'll tell you, like, I don't like running. I don't like running at all. And, you know, Jim just loved doing these from, what were they called, the 200s at the 45, out round the back of the goal and finish at the 45. You had to be in under 22 seconds. And if you weren't in, that was adding another one on. And there was nights where I was saying, you know, fuck that, hey, I'm way home. Hey. And there was actually one stage where I just said to Jim, no, I'm away, I've hurt my calf, I can't deal with that. But that's how he convinced you. He just told your body knew that he could do it, and the message he had, he was able to deliver it.
From your memory of it, Brendan, was the buzz building around Donegal pretty quickly as to what Jim McGuinness was doing in GAA circles as to what might be possible with this team?
It was wild strange, because But I'd be at all Donegal games, you know, covering and doing a bit of radio and that. And I hated Glenties so much. It was unbelievable. That type of football to me wasn't football. And the worse it got, then the more you bought into it. Next thing, I have to defend Donegal playing the exact same football. And I was like, oh, this is tight now, because I knew where this was going. But I was quite, I mean, the athleticism the boys showed was one thing, but tactically, I was very surprised at the other managers around the country, because very quickly, we formulated a plan to take on Niamh Connell, you know, and them tactics. Now, club and county was different, because you can lock down a 45 with county players. You put 14 players, 15 inside a 45, there's no space. Club, you'd often get a bit of space. So it was a different thing. With all these guys inside the 45, they were just mopping up, and then breaking. But watching the other teams, you know, Baker, Donegal's very first championship game, Baker come up and said, we're going to set up like you. And that was a real tough game. Mark McHugh got a goal later on. And you're like, you know, where's this going? Throne was a big one then. Obviously, Throne a load of chances first half, missed a lot of scores. Donegal grew in confidence. Brick got a late goal, went in there. And then you went to the semi-final with Dublin. And you think about Dublin, everybody booed. They were booing. I've never been in Croke Park. Everybody's booing the game. I was like, geez, where's this going? But I knew what we had to do, and I knew what we were trying to do, but we just hadn't got the evolution up front. So in 2012, then, when we swept all before us, I just couldn't believe. No one tried to counteract Donegal at all. Every game I went in there, I'm watching the opposition, I'm thinking, we're going to win. We're going to bloody win all Ireland. You know, it just seemed like it couldn't happen. Then it was there. It was a brilliant time to be a Donegal fan. 2013, and obviously the party must have geeked out again, because we got our ass backed by Mayo, remember, in Croke Park. And then in 14, when we come back in, now teams had started then setting up like us, and in the All-Ireland final then, and everybody talks about potentially one that got away, you know, Kerry, within 2 weeks of playing swashbuckling football against Mayo in a replay and all the drama, just went like us, put in two sweepers, pulled back their half forward line, and suddenly Donegal were facing themselves. And what happens was, in that period, we played six games in the 4 years of Jim where the team murdered us. We won three and we lost three. And that says a lot about that tactic, and you see how bad it got then. But in Iceland, particularly in 2012, obviously, so many teams we played, Cork and Kerry, the kind of aristocrats of the game at the time, everybody in Mayo in the final, we're going to play our own football. And a bit like us, as we say, we Donegal, we're going to play our own football. Against an organised, rigid team, you're going to come out. The difference was then, as we say, as tactics then got similar, it became more and more difficult for Donegal. Now we're changing the game. But at that time, you know, that run, I suppose, was a magical time for Donegal. 2012, 2014, some of the best memories of my life.
Yeah, even 2011, there's so many memories. Like your point against Kildare, and one of the great qualifier games that people still look back on now, was just such a dramatic evening. And then to go from that to the semi-final, and as Brendan says, people are booing, it's such a low-scoring game. As players at that stage, have you fully bought into this tactic? Are you believing that this is going to get us to the Holy Grail? Or are you looking at the papers going, geez, we're getting slated left, right and centre here?
Eamon's probably the same. It didn't bother me one bit. You know what? Whatever he said, you want to do. Do you know what I mean? The day of the Dublin game, we didn't know the team or the tactics until that morning, because obviously Jim didn't want it getting out. And in the room, he told us, he said, listen, it's going to be a low scoring game. He says, Baron Brogan's going to start shooting from the Hogan stand. You run this game. Luckily, I was running defence anyway, but the lads were pulling back. Maybe, you know, we didn't even hear the boos, to be honest with you. I never heard them anyway. And then when these things start to happen, I think Alan Brogan shot from beside the dugout one time and it went away. It didn't even go wide. And you're starting to say, this is exactly where we want them to be. And I think if you look back at that game, Colin McFadden was kind of foul, but he slipped, had that one in, you're Dublin beaten. And I honestly don't think Kerry would have lived with that once they were met it that day, though.
What was the message then that morning, if he's only fully briefing you on the tactics, which to me seems quite remarkable from a Jim McGuinness point of view, who I would have always imagined was so thorough and would have wanted to spend the full 2-3 weeks on the training ground ramming this home. Like, what was he able to say in the space of a couple of hours that you were able to go out and almost execute it to perfection?
Well, my instructions were always pretty simple. You have Ona Gara or Killeen O'Connor, do not let him out of your sight. And that's after Ali switched off. But now, with that, and you know, this is what Jim would have talked about in terms of getting the men back, was he talked about percentages. Every man, you still have to be that tight cornerback. You still have to dog it out. And what we're doing now is we're increasing the percentages that if that man beats you that one time out of 10, there's someone else to cover it. And we were all just training hard. We're putting it in games, getting forward, getting back, organizing. And it was just more or less delivering that, but with numbers. And I think it was Colin that was the lone man up front, was it? Yeah. Did we even have one man up front?
Colin up on his own, yeah.
And but again, it made no sense from a coaching perspective, like, to just go on and win the All-Ireland that year. You know, I think Kevin's right. Kerry might have struggled, but it's nearly unheard of for a team just to start off on their journey, learn one aspect of the game, and then, you know, that's enough. It took the second year where we had to, we seen the All-Ireland final, we were hitting Murphy with the ball, we were able to attack, we had a far more offensive game, and that was the evolution of our team. For the first, it was just about bedding and making us hard to beat. And then I think McGuinness knew deep down, I think he talked about it afterwards, that he didn't expect to win the All-Ireland that year. We'd have been very, very hard to beat. But the second year or even the third year, that was his plan, you know, in terms of winning the All-Ireland.
Was it almost then about casting off the mental shackles in 2011? That's exactly what
2011 was just, you know, getting that steel by the training. The training, I don't think there was too much scientific. Wasn't, you know, sports science would have been looking on and they would have been just putting their hands over their head, just run. And you're breaking them down, and you're breaking them down mentally. Jim was a sports psychologist. He was chatting about, and it wasn't coming out these buzzwords where you close your eyes and you visualize yourself and lifting Sam Maguire. He was just constantly telling you, you're as good as Tyrone. We had such a, because at that stage we were inferiority complex. We thought we weren't as good as Armagh. We thought we weren't as good as Tyrone. And he was just constantly reinforcing, we're as good. We're as good as anybody in the country here. We don't look down our noses at anybody. Nobody looks down their noses at us. And, you know, we started to believe, and it was just drip, until he actually says, yeah, you know, we can hold our chests out here.
So 2012, Kevin, from your point of view, and the book with Declan Bowe.
Slightly different
year. Yeah. When do you first get an inkling that there's an issue?
I think it was Eamon that texted me. I was in New York, and pieces from the book must have been released to the paper or whatever. And Eamon texts, and he says, listen, there's a wee bit of trouble at home here. To be honest with you, at the start, I didn't think anything of it. And then when I arrived home, I don't know if there's a message on my phone or Jim rang, but anyway, I was to go to the Clannery to meet him. So I arrived at the Clannery, and Maxie Curran, Rory Gallagher, and Jim McGuinness were sitting there. So he listened, he says, obviously you know why we're here. I said, yeah, whatever. And he asked me, first question, he says, why did you not tell me? I suppose looking back now, I should have told him. In my head, it was just a book, it was a sideline.
It wasn't that you thought if you told him he'd...
No, I actually didn't. When Declan asked me to do the book, I agreed. Contrary to what people think, there was no financial gain or any of that kind of stuff for anybody in that book. It was more that Declan was doing this for his career and he needed seven guys to help him, and I said I would help him. Did I set out to do any damage to any of these lads or Jim? Absolutely not. Eamon will tell you, once I'm in a dressing with you, I'm with you all the way. I went about my business, training, doing whatever I was doing that year. And then obviously Jim took issue with stuff that was said, and perhaps that maybe I didn't pass through him or whatever. And I can see his point of view of what he was trying to create. Do you know what I mean? That was an issue.
When you were having the conversations though with Declan Bogue, and when you're talking about what's happening in the camp and what had happened during the 2011 season, what Eamon had said there, that you're hearing, or you're not hearing anything from the training sessions when you were out of the picture for 6 months, that there was this sort of air of secrecy. Mm. Was there not a part of you that was sort of aware that actually I'm breaking some sort of trust here?
When I spoke to Declan, I agreed that I wouldn't speak about any team. Just say we were playing Tyrone. I wouldn't speak with him before the Tyrone game. It'd be after the Tyrone game. So that, I suppose, I was silly thinking that this way I wasn't doing any harm to the team, because there's no way I was going to sit with a journalist and say, listen, we're doing this and we're going to beat Tyrone this way. That wasn't, like, he would come to my house on a Tuesday after the game and he would say, how did you feel? How did you play? What did you do in the lead up? That kind of way. That was the approach I took. Like, looking back now, hindsight's a great thing. Would I have done it again? I probably would have agreed to do the book unless Jim told me not, to be honest with you. And listen, that conversation, the Clannery, it was very quick. And it was just plain to be seen that there was no way either of us could work together again.
Were you shocked with how it exploded?
I was. And to be honest, that would be my major gripe, because leaving the room, the last thing that was said to me was, say nothing to nobody, keep this between ourselves. And I didn't even tell my wife. I drove home and I was walking through the supermarket up the road, and I came out over the radio that I'd been dropped off this panel. Now that's 30 minutes, 40 minutes. And I'd found out since that Jim rang a journalist and told a journalist this. I had an issue with that because he told me this is staying quiet. And I was happy enough for that. That was grand. I had kind of made the decision that I was going to do 1 year anyway and give it everything. But after we got so close to Dublin, I had a conversation with Dublin and I said, listen, I'll come back the following year. But listen, it's water under a bridge now. And although, like, the times Eamon's talking about, I missed out and all that, and fantastic moments and fantastic memories to have. But, you know, it is what it is. You need to move on, you know.
Mm. I know you say no regrets. Mm. And are there nights when you're lying in bed going, I wonder what if?
Like, people say this to me all the time, and I'm sick of giving them the answer, because you probably think I'm lying now when I'm looking at you, but there's not one moment I turn around and says, I wish I didn't do this. Or honestly, the kind of person I am, if something happens, take it, learn from it, and move on. And honestly, I did. After that conversation in the Clannery, we had a conversation at my school April time, when Jim came to the school. And as far as I was concerned, my career finished that night in the Clannery, and that was me done, you know.
Can you understand why, I guess, people on the outside would find that difficult to believe? Even, as you say, when Jim McGuinness came down a few months later to meet you, and I guess he probably came down thinking, you're watching what's going on, that Donegal are really building towards something very special, that you'd be desperate to get back in, considering how much of your life you've dedicated to that team, and he's willing to let you come back. But I think he said that he felt there was no remorse, that there was no real sign at all from you that there were any regrets, that there was any sense that you wanted to come back.
Yeah, definitely. And it is, because the lads will tell you again, when I played them for 10, 12 years and even around the club here, when I'm in, it's my life, you know. And Donegal was my life, and I gave every last ounce of energy I ever had when I was there. Just whatever happened that night, I don't think I could have gone through that brick wall again for him. And the last thing I said when he left the school is, I don't think Donegal football's going to benefit if I come back. And it was just the best thing to do for me and for everybody involved. And thankfully, like, obviously the lads went on to one. Mm. I would have hated the situation if I said, okay, I'll go back. And I went back in and things started to go sour and it was all down to me. At least I was gone out of the equation, you know.
It's never just about you with these things, though. There's a family, there's a club, there's all these people. Everybody has an opinion. Like, dealing with that side of it, I'm sure there was a desperation around here for you to go back in.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, where we come from, football's everyone to us. And I think it affected others more than it did myself, even the day and the weeks after the All-Ireland final. I know it did seriously hurt people. Maybe I blocked it out. But as you say, it's like it probably touched a lot more people than just me and Jim. I've met people throughout Ireland all the time who come up to me, I don't even know, but they have an opinion on it. But again, that's great, because that's GA and that's what we all love, you know.
You missed out on the party as well.
I know, yeah. Do you know what? That's probably the hardest thing. It's not about the medal, or it's not about, you know, I think it's the memories more than anything, because we would have spoken about it an awful lot. And
that's the Mayo man you're chatting to here.
The medal.
No memories, no good memories at all. Mayo football is making Donegal right now. So watch who you're laughing at.
But it's those times, the dark times, where nobody would have believed that we would even won a game. We spoke about, imagine coming in the door, what would we do, where would we go? And I would say my wife is delighted because I'd probably go missing for 2 or 3 weeks if we'd have won that. But those are the hardest things that you probably missed out on is the memories. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I'd say you got involved in the party. I think I was standing beside you in the press box at Crow Park. You were out the gap about 2 minutes after they lifted Sam.
Yes, it'll happen for you someday soon. But, you know, you're on about Kevin. Like, I believe what he's saying about this, and most people I wouldn't, because he's so strong-willed. I think when he does so and he does it, and like he says, I know it's hard to believe, Nathan, but I believe him. That was a tough thing to take over. But if you put the context of your life and sport and everything, if you start looking back and regret, you're wasting your life and your time, and he has so much to do in such a great time. And look at the things that happened to him this year. I was most delighted for him we get over this year than anybody because of that shit that happened to me, Donegal, because he was such a warrior, as he keeps saying. That's what he was. He was like something out of Braveheart, you know, whenever that one blew over from Glasgow, we were lucky that he landed, you know. I landed for Northampton, he came in a spaceship. And the philosophizer. But I believe the man, you know, me and this man were down the back. I was a fan of Jesus, he wasn't. And we'd be both trying to turn each other, you know. And this would go on up and down the bus and that. But Eamon, when we were heading the sausage, Eamon always had a date lined up. He's a real Lothario, this guy. Something that he might
all his family are here now. What's
that saying? just a date, but he would be with me. And he'd be hopping off the bus at random places. I don't know what he was at.
I was just kidding. The fact you're calling somebody else a Lothario worries me somewhat. Just take us back then to that night and finally getting there. And, like, is it everything you thought it was going to be, winning that All-Ireland? Like, the journey had been a bit of a roller coaster. You've been in, you've been out so many different times.
Yeah, and, you know, was it everything I thought it would be? It definitely wasn't, because as it says, you know, myself and Kevin, Neil, countless hours, you know, planning this day and planning this night. And we're going to take the cup here, take it down to Mickey's, go over to Hughie Biggs, and it was just, we were going to take over this cup if it came. And it wasn't nothing like that at all. You know, there was this plan for the week. But the feeling of relief, you know, when that final whistle went, you know, that we'd done it. You know, it was just a special, special feeling. And probably one of the nicest things of that time was going up and chatting the gym. And I think you actually catch it on, I've seen it, the clip of it, catch it on the coverage, and the TV coverage was just Jim and myself having a few words, and that was special. Like, that was just kind of, we've done it now, and we'll always have this. And we went into the dressing room, and, you know, it was different when we wanted what the club would get over. The dressing room was going buck mad. We went into the dressing room in 2012, and it was subdued, because everybody was just, had given everything. There wasn't much energy. They were just getting their second wind, and I was thinking, right, is this it now? And, you know, things kicked into gear then. And, you know, Devaney's chatting about getting off in random spots. You know, I just take these notions. And I was on the bus and I says, no, I want to go down to Anagra. And told Jim, right, I'm away. And all the boys headed there at Kenny and they did a day somewhere else. And I'm down Anagra sipping away. And the boys then say, the bus is coming into your door, so that boy and a few others were out on this search party. Eamon needs to be on the bus that's coming into your door, because the two brothers were there and there was no sign Eamon, and there was a bit of a panic on. And eventually they got up with me, they dropped me on the bus up on just outside Dunluce there, and you know, coming into your door, coming into the hometown was unreal. And great feeling, and there was definitely a part of me that thought, you know, felt for Cass, definitely, because as we talked about it so much. And I also, like Devaney, I believe him too. If once you get to know Kevin, like once he's reen, that's what they say in Gidor.
What does that mean?
Lovely.
Once he makes his mind up, and that's it, like, He's content in that decision. And, you know, you hear it so many times, you know, Cass doesn't really mean that when he says that, from people outside that don't really know him. But once you know him, and like the people that are close with him and the people that have went on that journey and soldiered with him, they know that he's genuine when he says, listen, I'm over that now.
We're here tonight with thanks to Super Value. They're celebrating 10 years as sponsor of the All-Ireland Senior Football Championship. You did get your big day, winning that Ulster club title. We want to talk about the victory and the Ulster club title, so Brendan, you'll have to leave. No, seriously. We're going to take a quick 5-minute break and we get that mic off you, and then we're going to chat to the two lads about Guido's story over the last year.
GAA on Off the Ball.